Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and Life Coach Wendy Dillard here. Today is Friday. Happy Friday, June the 15th, 2018.
Happy Friday.
Yeah, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, your second and really last daily dose of happy for the week, at least the weekday part of the week. We have, of course, one on the weekend that David Barkey and I do, but this is where we officially draw the week to a close and everybody celebrates. It's time for the weekend. Let's go off and play and go to the beach and all that good stuff. Hooray!
Hooray.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if we've ever talked about it, but the music that you have as the intro outro is so upbeat that I'm finding myself right now like a tapping my feet together like a little kid, like, oh, isn't this fun?
Isn't the truth? I mean, there have been times, I remember one time commenting on how, depending on how I was feeling, the music would feel either slow or fast or moderate pace. But you're right, it is an upbeat tune. It's got a nice little toe-tapping thing to it. And on
it
a Friday,
nice.
I think we especially feel it on a Friday, I guess. So, how's your week been? You had a good week so far?
My week has been awesome. I'm about to go on vacation again next week from my job, so I'm really looking forward to whatever the universe has for me. I'm open. I have a couple ideas of what things I'd like to do, but I'm open to whatever the divine guidance is that comes to me, and I'll follow it.
So when you're going on to the weekend, your weekend goes on for like 9 days. That's pretty good.
Yes, it does. Boy, that's the way to go. And that's, of course, what I'm looking forward to when I exit my day job. Not that I won't ever work or that I won't, you know, be doing things that have significance to it, but all of the time will be mine. And I like the idea of that.
That's so nice. Yeah. Well, that's what we really want, isn't it? I mean, when we talk about freedom, when we talk about living our abundant lifestyle, we really want the time. We want the time to do what we want to do with it. And, you know, so
well,
that's what,
and you know, a lot of my coworkers love the structure of the job that we have. I mean, the company that I work for and the people that work with me, we all work virtually. And so it's like we all know what our job is and they do it. You know, the other ones are less time constrained than me because I like have to be available to my team because I'm a support person. But, you know, I think there are lots of different jobs that create a level of freedom and still have structure. And, you know, I think, well, I know we can have anything we want so long as we stay focused on it, you know, and the only people that feel stuck in their jobs are because they're focused on being stuck in their job or haven't allowed themselves to expand to more thoughts about what they could have.
This is true. Yeah. I mean, it really is attitude and it's really perspective. And how we decide to look at it. I'm kind of a little slow-witted right now because literally, as we are starting the show off and doing our discussion, I just received an email from David Barkey, who does the Sunday program with me. And I think we're on the same page because he wrote to me, because of Father's Day, can we do the show a little bit later? So I agree automatically. I want to do a later show on Sunday because we're probably going to be going up to Vermont or something like that for the day. So 9 p.m. works better. So we're going to do a 9 p.m. podcast on Sunday. So you heard it here first.
Is your show on Sunday live?
It is live, yes. It's a live show.
Okay.
Yeah. And so that's why I want to give people the heads up that if they decide they want to tune into the live show, then they can listen in at 9 p.m. instead of 8 p.m. Eastern Time. I really don't know what that has to do with what we were talking about, but it just drew my attention. Like, oh, email from David.
Well, we were talking about freedom, and a lot of people think of, you know, because I was saying that, you know, I'll be on vacation next week. You said, oh, that means you have 9 days of freedom. But I really look at freedom differently.
Oh, how's that?
Freedom is a state of mind.
Oh.
And if you like what you're doing, it doesn't matter if you're time boxed in because you have to be somewhere at a certain time or whatever. It's really the freedom of how you feel about things. Freedom is a state of mind because freedom is how we think, which equates to how we feel. And if we feel free, it doesn't matter what we're doing.
Yeah, this is true.
You know,
because really, it's all perspective anyway. So whatever perspective we bring is going to be a feeling perspective unless we're just, you know, disconnected from our own feelings. But ultimately, that's what it is a feeling perspective.
Yeah. One of my favorite TV shows, it was only on for about two seasons. It was called Life with Damian Lewis. Hmm. And Damian Lewis was a cop. And he had the show starts out where he had been imprisoned, I think, for like 11 years inappropriately. Like they stacked the evidence against him that was not real. And so finally he gets out of prison with a huge financial settlement from the government for them, you know, sending him to prison inappropriately.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, it's a cop show. He goes back onto the force. And what's so fascinating is you get to see and hear how he expresses himself. Having been through 11 years of prison, he didn't come out angry like you would think.
Mm.
He found himself while he was in prison. He was doing a lot of self-help reading while he was in prison.
Huh.
And so he was very zen. That's what he used to say. He was really into his zen space. And one of the episodes that really, really struck me, it was called The Social Experiment. And it's where this college had set up this scenario where they, you know, took one of the areas of the school and turned all the classrooms into what they called prison rooms. And they had some of the people that were considered prisoners and some, and the other half were considered the wardens. And they just put them in this space, you know, with a couple of parameters for like a weekend and wanted to see what happened. Well, you know, it's a cop show. So, of course, somebody gets killed. One of the college students get killed, and he was one of the supposed prisoners. And then, of course, the majority of the show is about figuring out which person killed him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it wasn't important who killed him, but the part why I'm talking about this is because at the very end, they figured out the murderer, and this young kid really did murder this other kid because something that was considered a play, it wasn't based on reality, became such a real scenario in their minds that he felt really threatened, so much so that he killed this other person, you know, in the quote game.
Wow.
What's also fascinating is never were the doors locked. In other words, any one of these college students could have exited the game at any time. The experiment would be over for them. They would just walk out and go to their own dorm.
Hmm.
But at the very end, Damian Lewis is sitting on the floor up against a wall with this kid who knows the police are on their way and they're about to cuff him and take him to jail. And he knows there's enough evidence that he's going to do time.
Okay.
And he was just sitting there with this grimace, like, oh my God, I've just screwed up my life. And Damian Lewis says to him with, and this may sound, I found this very encouraging, but he said, I'll tell you, I've been in prison. He explained his story and he said, the first couple of days, maybe even years, are rough. However, even though you're going to prison, you don't have to be in prison. You can be free. And he points to his head. You can be free. The decision is yours. And that's how the show ends. And I was like, whoa. Because even though that was about real prison, I believe that also metaphorically can map over to anybody in any walk of life, that even if they're not behind literal jail bars, we have the choice to imprison ourselves mentally.
Oh, yeah.
Through all sorts of things. We might feel we're in prison because we're in a family that we don't like, or we're in prison because we're in a job that we don't like, or a marriage that we don't like, or there's all sorts of possibilities, or debts we don't like. We could feel imprisoned by, you know, our debt. Or we can choose to turn things around and be free. And regardless of the external circumstances, we can free ourselves through how we choose to think. And even though this television show was based on, you know, just an idea, you know, I don't believe it was based on reality. I believe that the concepts are very accurate, very true. And there are plenty of other, quote, prisoners of war or people who have been in prison who have come out, like a Nelson Mandela.
Yeah.
In almost a better state than when they went in. So really, whether we feel in prison or in freedom, it's all a state of mind, and it's all within our choice. It's all within our control.
Well, we certainly see that in our daily lives, in our exchanges with other people. I see it on Facebook all the time in the Law of Attraction groups. Amazing, amazing how many people who have at least some minor understanding of Law of Attraction go on and on and on about all the bad things going on in their lives. I mean, they're totally imprisoning themselves just by doing that. And yet, absolutely, they keep doing it. And it's like post after post and person after person. It's like this long line of people just can't wait to go into how bad their lives are. Wow.
Well, and you know, there's so many reasons why we tell stories in a way that really don't serve us. Sometimes it's just because that's what other people do, so that's how, what we've learned to do, and we don't think to do it other way.
Yeah.
The reason I used to do it, the old me, is because I felt so obligatory when it came to telling the truth. I felt like telling the old story was part of me being a truth teller.
Well, sure, because it's about the what is. It's about what, quote, reality, unquote, is.
Exactly. You know, and I'm all about being truthful and honest and whatnot. And I've had to redefine for myself what being honest and truthful really is. And
so how do you define it now? Like when you think of that concept of honesty and truth, how do you define it now?
Well, now my truth is what is in my vibrational reality. It's what my forever me, which is my inner being, what I know my inner being knows about me, my potential, my what's coming down the pike, what's in the pipeline for me, what's in my vortex, any way you want to look at it. That's the real me, and that's my real truth. And so I can talk about my life in a way that if you didn't know me, you might think is very different than what my what is it actually is. Because I can talk about what, and it can feel so real to me that the person who's listening to my story would have no reason to think I wasn't speaking absolute what is truth. Because it's my truth that I really believe in is what's in my vortex. It's what's in the pipeline for me. I know that my life is filled with magnificent, wondrous things for me. I know that it holds everything I've ever desired. I know that I live a happy, magnificent life. I know I live like a queen. I know I live in a way that others are in awe. I have a fabulous relationship. The man in my life, he like worships the ground I walk on, and I worship the ground he walks on. We're totally in love. We're totally in sync. We have a wonderful intimate life, but we share everything in a way that is so synchronistic. We love to do business together. We love to play together. My business is always growing and expanding, and it just tickles me every day when I come up with new proactive ideas of how to expand the business in ways that not only will it excite me, but it will make a difference of incredible value for the people on our planet. Those who are ready to expand and become more of who they want to be. It's like, those are my customers. Those are the people that I'm helping in incredible, incredible ways. And I have so much free time that I travel wherever I want with my loved one. And he and I have so much fun. We take pictures. We're out on the water. We're out in the mountains. We're in snow caps. We're just enjoying all that nature really has for us. We're exploring this magnificent planet because it's filled with so many wondrous riches of just, it's what we're connected to. And so, you know, I love my life. I love where I live. I love my relationship. I love my job. I love the people that I connect with. That's my truth.
Wow. I mean, that's what Abraham followers call a rampage. That was a great rampage.
I've never done that one before. That was very fun.
That
I
was
loved
really
it.
Good.
Awesome.
Like, whoa.
Now, if you didn't know me, you would believe that was my life right now in three-dimensional reality, wouldn't you?
Yeah, that was beautiful. Wow.
So thank really you nice. For asking the question. That's my truth.
That's
how I reconcile truth and reality, because I am so not concerned with what is. What is old news. What is the launching off pad for what I just explored and explained.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But boy, what? Oh, you just really nailed it there. That was literally, we've done a lot of them here. I mean, I've done some with you. I've done some with Tom Wells, Cindy Chavez. We've all done at various times these rampages. That was really one of the best ones because it just
Thank
came out
you.
like it was so real to you. And because it was real to you, it sounded real to me. And I know you, and I know what the situation is. And I'm thinking, wow, that sounds really real.
And here's the cool part. Anybody who's listening to this, you can play it back over and over, and you can say, I'll have that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'll have that reality. That can be my, if it resonates, if any part of it doesn't have to be all of it, but if any part of it resonates with you, go, that's mine. That's me. And the reason you resonate is because it is your truth. It is your reality. It is in your vortex. It is waiting for you in the pipeline.
That's
So
really
you can
great.
have it all. You
Yeah.
can have it all.
Yeah. Well, that's just it. I mean, we're all trying to learn how to basically tell the story that way. And I think you just demonstrated just through that how far you've come in terms of retelling your story the way you want it to be, because I mean, it was seamless. Really, that was beautiful. You couldn't have edited that one better.
So we'll call this the new me, because
The new you.
the old me could not have done that. The old me would be telling you what is, and I would have told it in nitty gritty detail.
Yeah.
And there would have been a lot of words like but, however,
Sure.
in
Oh,
it.
yeah.
But now it just, I remember listening to an Abraham CD many years ago, and they were talking about telling a better story. And I kept listening. You know me, I listen over and over, and I was listening over and over, and I thought, oh my God, how the heck does Abraham do that? It seems so easy for them. And I mean, when they ask someone in the hot seat, go ahead, just start the new story. It's like the person in the hot seat can't even get out the first phrase of the first sentence. They felt so stuck. And I would test myself, and I turn off the CD player, and I go, okay, Wendy, start. And I go, well, and I remember saying, okay, I know that what they're talking about in telling a new story is one of the most significant ways to create your reality, to bring the future into the now. It's one of the most fabulous ways to create, be a part of the creation process. And I said to the CD player, I'm gonna master the art of storytelling. I'm gonna master it. Don't know how it's gonna happen, but I'm gonna master it. 'Cause I'll tell you, I just bumbled through it for the longest time. And about 3 years later, I was listening to one of those CDs again, and I went, oh, I do that naturally now. Honestly don't know how it happened or when it happened, but I know that my life is always incremental. In terms of, I keep listening to things over and over with my antenna up and my intensity of desire open. Like, yes, I want that. I want that. I want that. I want to be able to do that. I want to tell that, be able to tell that story. And they would rampage beautiful stories of love and appreciation. I'm like, yeah, I don't know how they put those words together, but yeah, I'll have some of that too.
Yep.
And eventually it landed on today's podcast.
There
So
it was.
somehow it worked.
It really
I
did.
intensely desired it, and it came about because I asked for it.
By the way, I have numerous times in the past mentioned my appreciation and admiration for how you have this pattern of listening to the material from Abraham over and over and over again. And I thought you might like to know you have kind of a spiritual sister out there who's a friend of mine
Oh,
from
yeah.
many years back. Yeah, at the book signing that I did this past Tuesday, I reconnected with a friend that I've known for a number of years. For a number of years, we were swing dancers. We danced in the same swing dance community. And we reconnected through the Buttonwood, which is Anne Marie's and Mike's Cultural Arts Center in Middletown, where we did the book signing. And I was chatting with her at one point during that proceeding. And she mentioned that she also listens to all of the workshops and CDs recordings that she gets multiple times. I said, well, Wendy listens to them 3 times at least. She says, oh, I listen to them at least that, more than that. Like, whoa, oh my goodness, another person just listens and listens and repeats and repeats. And I'm like, wow. I mean, I've never had the opportunity, and since I've reconnected with Marilyn, to find out, does she has she learned the same kind of personal storytelling like you have, but Now I'm curious. Next time I see her, I'm going to ask her how she's doing with that. Because if she's listening as much as you are, she's probably got a pretty good story she's telling too, I would think. But
Well,
wow.
and since I've listened to every CD 3 times before I go on to the next CD, one of the things you and I both know, if you listen to enough Abraham, a lot of their stuff is very similar. So I may listen to one CD 3 times and the next one 3 times and the next one and the next one, but they're pretty much telling the same stuff on every one. So it is an incredible teaching tool of repetition for me. And I really do believe that the success in almost everything that I am successful in is because I have learned it through the art of repetition. I mean,
That's
there's
very good.
nothing that I've ever listened to 1 time and it stuck. That's just not how our brains are even wired. We're wired for
True.
repetition.
Yeah, that's true.
That's from if,
We do better
if
when
we
they
live in households
Yeah.
where, our parents do the same types of things over and
Oh,
over,
yeah.
that's how come, even if they never say words, we'll go, "Oh my gosh, you're just like your mom or you're just like your dad."
Well, that's why training is so effective. Training is repeating the same task over and over again in the same way, so you learn the method to do it over and over again, and it just becomes ingrained. That's the whole point of training. That's really interesting, though, because when I was talking with a group on Tuesday, and I think there's also another conversation that I may be kind of blurring in my mind. You know how that can happen. But I can recall at least one or two people telling me that they appreciate our podcast because, like you said, with Abraham, you listen to it and it's like hearing the same thing over and over again. They like our podcast because we mix it up so much. I mean, we are talking about the same topic every single day, but it's so conversational that it doesn't sound like it's the same topic every day. And I thought that was a pretty, a pretty good plus that they gave us on that.
That is nice because sometimes I feel like I say the same thing every show.
Well, yeah, because we do.
I think we weave it in. Maybe what they're saying is we weave it in by telling different stories and through different life experiences because it's the same principles, but shows up in a myriad of ways. And
Exactly.
that is the fun of, the topic of law of attraction because it doesn't ever show up the same way twice.
Which is probably why we have so many people who are subscribers and keep listening to podcast after podcast after podcast from us, every single episode that we put out and then some. And in fact, I want to take a moment to urge those who are relatively new listeners who haven't heard many of our episodes yet, become a subscriber. It's free, it's easy, takes about a minute, and it feeds all of our episodes right to your smartphone. So you can just listen anytime you want, whether you're, traveling to or from work or doing something around the house or just hanging out, talking to friends, whatever. Maybe you're just playing it in the background. But people are finding that when they play our show regularly, it improves their life. It gets them into that happier place. That's why we call it your daily dose of happy. So just go to the homepage, loatoday.net. All the instructions are right there. Follow the instructions. Takes about a minute. Hit the social media button afterward to say, "Hey, I just subscribed to LOA Today," and you're done. And then you're a member of the club. Welcome to the club.
And one of our listeners, which I just think is so funny, one of our listeners said the show that's done with me in particular is kind of like a soap opera because I do tend to share my life from day to day. And
This is true.
apparently, I keep people on the edge of their seat, like as a cliffhanger, from time to time. So, if you do like the soap opera format, I think I'm pretty good at it. I didn't mean to. It just sort of unfolded naturally.
I should get some like old time radio soap opera music to play in the background when we do our show.
Well, I started watching soap operas, I think when I was homesick in the 7th grade, my mother was watching, I think, One Life to Live or The Guiding Light or something like that. And I was watching them with her. And then over the years, like in the summertime, when we were out of school, I could watch the soap operas on my own. And so I started when All My Children was in 30 minutes black and white. And Susan Lucci was 18 years old.
Okay.
And then eventually I added more and more and more until the day of like when we were, recording things on VCRs, I was recording 3 hours a day because I would do, it was three soaps back to back. And, I got to tell you, it was really hard to fit in time during the week and the weekend to watch 15 hours worth of this stuff. So eventually I had to give it up and I did. But I think that the reason I'm sharing this is because I have soap opera in my blood. I've watched so many hours of soap opera. I know how they go.
Well, you also have immersion in your blood too. I mean, you immerse yourself in Abraham, and there now you're telling the story about how you immersed yourself in soap operas. Seems like anything that's an interest of yours, you just dive right in and you swim around in it for hours and hours and hours at a time.
Well, you know, like now it's kind of not like as of today, but lately it's a common phrase to talk about binge watching.
Right.
Well, I think I was a binge watcher way back when, before binge watching was like a trend. I think I had been a binge watcher, a binge listener, a binge anything that had a slightly addictive, obsessive quality to it, I was there.
Okay. Well, you heard it here first, folks.
Well, you know, I've got a little bit of OCD in me. My mom's very OCD. And, you know, sure, I could work on getting rid of it, but there's so much of the character of being OCD, at least how it shows up in my life, is very beneficial. So, I have no reason to let it go.
The only reason that OCD ever is a problem is if it's inhibiting, if it's holding you back in some way.
Exactly.
But a lot of the characteristics are very valuable, particularly if you're learning something or if you're trying to modify your life in some way. Boy, that kind of characteristic can be invaluable. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
It's like anything else. It's pluses and minuses, right? Mm-hmm. Just depends on how you look at it. Which is kind of a nice introduction to the book we've been talking about. We haven't actually talked about it in a couple of days, but we are working our way through The Law of Attraction, The Basics of the Teachings of Abraham by Esther and Jerry Hicks. We're in part 4, and we're up to a topic that's entitled, Is There Value in Losing One's Life? This is another Jerry and Abraham conversation, so we'll do the roles here. But Jerry starts off by saying, haven't you said that through having these life experiences, that's how we learn our lessons? But when a person loses their physical life in the process of some violent experience, have they learned any lesson?
And Abraham says, it is not that you are being offered lessons, quote unquote. We do not like that word very much, for that sounds as if there is some order of that which you should or must learn, and there is none of that. It is that your life experience brings you knowing, and you become wiser and broader through your knowing. What must be understood before you can appreciate the value, even in loss of physical life, is that you are adding unto the greater, broader experience than you once know as your collective experience here in the physical body. Everything that you are now living adds unto broader knowing. And so, even when you are removed from your focus through this body, all that you have experienced here will be part of that greater knowing that you hold. And so, yes, there is even value in having an experience that removes you from this physical body. It is not for nothing.
That's an interesting distinction, though. I mean, it's a fairly subtle one. It's so subtle that it makes me want to bring it up again. On the one hand, they're saying it's not about lessons. On the other hand, they're saying it's about becoming a wiser and broader through knowing. Where do you see the difference being?
Well, for me, knowing is like having awareness. It's information. It's data. Where I think the concept of learning a lesson, at least for me, implies that there's some hardship that you must overcome in order to learn from your ways, in order to turn the corner and to do something different. And so I also don't think of things in terms of we're here to learn a lesson. Are we here to learn and expand and grow? Yes. But learning a lesson, that doesn't resonate with me anymore. It did once, but it doesn't anymore.
It's interesting how perspectives can be different. I mean, I can certainly empathize with what you're talking about. For me, the reason I don't like the word lesson is because a lesson is usually pre-planned. Somebody else planned this. Somebody else, you know, said, okay, this is what you're going to learn today. All right, class, let's all pay attention. You know, it's a pre-planned curriculum. And, you know, describing life experiences as being tied to a pre-planned curriculum really doesn't work in my mind at all. So that's the way I would kind of look at it. But that's interesting the way you looked at it, the idea of a lesson being, you know, somehow tied to something. I don't know exactly what you said, but it was unpleasant. It was not a happy thing for sure.
Yeah, and that's funny because I never even thought of, like, in school there are lesson plans for learning. You know, I was just, I guess the way I was thinking about it is how I used to articulate it and how I heard many others articulate it. Like if something negative was going on in their life, you know, and then they kind of flipped it over and they got to the other side, they'd say, well, you know, I went through that because I needed to learn that lesson, you know, or people oftentimes talk about patience. Like that's a lesson I need to learn. I need to learn like as if there was a chapter called patience. You know, and in order to learn patience, you have to endure something uncomfortable and somehow hold fast to it and not buckle under. You know, and to me, I'm like, ooh, yuck. No. Mm-hmm. And I'm totally on board with, I've heard Abraham say this, you know, you are not here to learn patience. Patience is really a man-made thing when they don't understand law of attraction.
Yeah. In fact, they've even said something to the effect that patience is something that they would not recommend someone aspire to. I found that really interesting. Like, no, we don't really believe that patience is a good thing to ask for.
Because we can have whatever we want. We don't have to wait for something. And if we, like, as if there's some power that be that's withholding something from us until we have somehow begged long enough and then we become deserving.
And that, you know, I think, like, that's where the overlap is between what your definition is and my definition is. In both cases, what we're talking about is an external manipulator, somebody doing the manipulating through lesson planning, through, you know, delivering lessons.
Right. Because I've also heard it in terms of kind of a more spiritual context, where it's like we have been put here on this planet to learn certain things. Like each person has been given their specific something that they're supposed to learn. And so they will go through many trials and tribulations en route to learning this specific characterization or this specific, you know, thing of learning kindness or love or forgiveness or whatever it may be. And so how it's really kind of been embedded in my understanding through my life experience has been that people use that kind of phrasing, you know, that we're here to learn lessons, as though it's a divine manipulation of something, like you said, pre-planned that you're supposed to learn. And I don't think it's nearly as structured as that. I think that the concept of learning lessons is a man-made idea where people conclude that because they don't know what else to do with the circumstances that they're going through.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, there are some people who will actually use this concept of a lesson in order to further their own agenda. And my favorite response to those people, because they were often religious, not always, but they were often from a religious perspective, was, oh, really? And what mountaintop were you standing on when you were handed that directive?
Yeah. So, you know, when I gave up the concept of I'm here to learn lessons, that freed me. Because I didn't like the idea that a lesson was being lorded over me, that I had to like wade through the trial and error of life experience in an ugly, difficult way to finally learn something. Because, you know, hey, I'm a fast learner. I learn by immersion and repetition. Give me the material, I'll have that cranked out, you know. But I want to do it at my own self-pacing.
Right, right.
Would you say, well?
I said you'll be swimming in it within a week.
Pretty much. Yeah, that's my style. So, yep. You know, but if somebody wants to believe that it's because they're here to learn a certain lesson or something in their life has helped them learn a lesson, and if it feels good, that's okay. It certainly doesn't hurt anybody, and it doesn't even hurt the individual who thinks that. It's just that when they feel like whatever negative things they've gone through, if they feel like there's some greater than them being that is orchestrating that so that they can learn a lesson, I'd say I don't think that's true. And, you know, I'm not quite sure in this moment how that will hurt them. But, you know, I think anytime you're living in a fallacy, it doesn't support you.
At least some level. Yeah, that's true. Now, the topic that they just addressed ties into the next topic, as so often was, you know, the way these books are organized. They're written in a way so that there's like a very small shade of gray between each of the topics. And this is another mm-hmm. case where they're doing the same thing. The next topic is, I am the culmination of many lifetimes. So we just explored the idea of what happens, you know, is there value in losing the life? Now what happens with the idea of many lives? Do we actually have many lives, you know? And even that's a bit of a controversial topic. There are some people who are not so sure about that. But it's still interesting to hear what Abraham has to say. And I have to say, I have become much more open to the idea of it after having read and heard Abraham than ever before. I mean, there was a time when I would have said, no, it's just one. But, you know, I think they're probably right about it. But anyway, I should let them speak for themselves. So Jerry says, are you saying that losing my life is an experience that somehow adds to all the experience of that broader being?
And Abraham says, it is indeed. You have lost your physical life on many occasions. You have lived thousands of lifetimes. That is the reason why you're, and this is to Jerry specifically, mm-hmm. okay? And that is why your zest for life is so great. We could not express to you in words the number of lifetimes that you have lived, let alone much detail from each of them. You have had so much experience that memory of all the experience would confuse and hinder you here. And so, as you were born into this body, you came forth not remembering which had been before, because you do not want the distraction of all of that memory. You have something much better than that. You have an inner being. That is the culmination of all those lifetimes of experience. Just as now, you are that which you are as a culmination of all that you've lived, there is little value for you to sit here and talk about the things that you did when you were 3, 10, or 12. Of course, you are that which you are now because of all of that. But to continue to look back into your past and regurgitate those experiences does not add much value, or does not add much unto that which you are now. And so, as you accept that you are this magnificent, highly evolved being, and as you are sensitive to the way you feel, then you have the benefit of your emotional guidance system as to the appropriateness of anything that you are about to do based on the way you feel. You are physical beings, and you are knowing you, the physical you, while most of you are not knowing yourself from the broader perspective. The physical you is magnificent and important, an important you, but it is also an extension of a broader, greater, wiser, certainly older you. And the inner you made the decision to come forth to be focused in this body because it wanted the experience of this lifetime to add unto the knowing of the greater, broader inner you.
Now, once I got past the idea of, okay, not just one lifetime, many lifetimes, perhaps thousands of lifetimes, and I think I pretty much got past that, the next thing that I pick up from this is a contrast to what we often hear about people talking about their understanding of spirit and of the spiritual world and so forth. For instance, one of the most famous people in this realm, so to speak, Shirley MacLaine, has rather famously shared her own perspectives that she's learned from her various influences and so forth about, you know, what the multiple lives are for, why we come back, you know, what her beliefs are about reincarnation and about karma and all this other stuff. And a common theme that she relates, that many people relate, is how we come here. And this kind of ties back to the previous one too, because the previous one was about learning the lesson, right? Well, we come here to learn stuff, and often we go through lifetimes over and over again because we haven't quite learned it right and so forth, which is different from what Abraham's talking about. And I just find it interesting that the Abrahamic presentation of this topic really varies rather significantly from the way it's usually presented.
Well, you know, there once was a time that I completely didn't believe in reincarnation because I was a Christian and raised as a Christian. You know, the understanding is one life only. That's it. Period. End of report.
Mm-hmm.
So because that's how I was reared, that's what I believed.
Sure.
But it was interesting that my metaphysical journey began on a beach in Naples, Florida, sitting on the beach with a book, 70 degrees in January, sitting there in shorts. I was there because I was a costume designer, and as a designer, my part of the everything was done, and I was there with a group of people that were performing, and they were all in rehearsals, and so I didn't have anything I had to do for work. So I'm sitting out on the beach, and what was interesting is the office manager that I worked with in that company, she loved to buy books at half-price books, and she saw this book, and she said, "It made me think of you, Wendy." And so I don't even know if it's something that you're interested in, but here you go. And it was the book called Many Lives, Many Masters. And right now the author's name escaped me. But he's a famous author, and he was a psychotherapist who also did hypnotherapy. And the book was all about how he would put people through the hypnosis process, and they were trying to work on all sorts of phobias and you know, disease and just all sorts of stuff going on in their life. And that's why they were seeing him. And one patient after another started under hypnosis, started explaining stories that he knew didn't belong to them.
Mm-hmm.
And what they were talking about were their past lives. And
past so life
this
regression.
Book is all about all these past life regression. I mean, that's kind of, I don't know if it was where it started, but it was not even a process he was doing purposefully at first.
Mm-hmm.
And as I read this book, now, mind you, here I was kind of post-Christianity, like I was coming out of Christianity, but I hadn't landed anywhere particularly. I just knew that I was in a state of much question. I read this book, and I'm not an avid reader. At least I wasn't back then. And I didn't read things with itty-bitty, tiny font size 4 print. I devoured this book. Hmm. I could not get enough of what I was reading. And that's part of how I explain to other people when you know you resonate with something as your truth.
Hmm.
Because the interest is so incredible, and it's so compelling, it felt addictive. Like, I couldn't put the book down. And when it was time for me to go and meet up with my troupe of actors, I was so disappointed. And I put my bookmark in, and I couldn't wait to have free time so I could read more.
Mm.
And I devoured that book. And that was what opened me up to believing in things that were outside of what Christianity considered acceptable.
Right.
And yeah. At that time, I didn't say, oh, yes, I believe in reincarnation. Yes, I believe in past lives. But I was open to that possibility.
Hmm.
And as I started listening to other people, I remember listening to Sylvia Brown, who's like old time psychic. She's probably 75, 80 years old by now.
Oh, at least.
But I mean, I started devouring her audio cassettes and reading her books and not buying everything she said, but being aware I was now open to new possibilities. I was hearing about new things that my Christianity wouldn't have even allowed me to be listening to. I would have been rebuked for it, or told that I was going to go to hell or that the devil had me or whatever.
Right.
So I was listening with these like ears of, whoa, this is all fascinating. So throughout my own personal metaphysical journey, I started to listen and be guided toward other things where it was very past life oriented. And so there came a point that I'm like, yeah, I believe that I've been here before. And even though I didn't know what all my past lives were, I was like, that's a possibility. I believe that we can connect to our past lives. Then I started doing past life regressions, and I started to experience some of my own past life experiences. And then I came to a point, and this might sound odd, where I went, you know what? I don't need that. It doesn't feel, it's not that it didn't feel not good, because it was very fascinating to connect with parts of me that have lived before. But for me personally, I went, you know what? Even before I knew Abraham, I just had this sense of, I'm here now. And I want to explore now. And my past is my past, and it'll always be there. And what I'm doing now will one day be part of my past when I come back again. But I want to fully enjoy what's going on now. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I do believe in past lives. Yes, I do believe in reincarnation. And I do believe that from lifetime to lifetime, we have new targets, new vision, new ideas of things we want to explore in the next incarnation. But I don't necessarily believe we're here to learn lessons. It's like either we'll expand in the way we hope to or not. And if not, we could do it again if we want, or we could do something different. Because this might sound silly, but I think about all the different lifetimes that we have available to us, both past, present, and future, like the board game called Life. Like, do you remember that board game?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
And not that the specifics of that board game are important, but I think of it like sometimes you played it, and within the board game, as you went around the, you know, the different squares and you picked up different cards and had different life experiences. Sometimes when you played the game, you got married and you had more kids than would fit in your little automobile.
Your little car, right.
Yeah. Other times you played it, you had no kids, but you got married. Other times you stayed single throughout the whole game. And so I think about that board game kind of as a metaphor for our real life experience. We get to do different things. And in that game, there wasn't a lesson to learn. You just landed on different squares and you had different experiences. And every time I played the game again, I took the knowledge of the previous times I've played it in helping me, let's say, to make better decisions if there was a card that you got to decide something or choose something versus when something just happened to you. And so I took each experience of having played the board game multiple times to make me better at it the next time. But I never felt like I was playing that game to learn the lesson. I just happened to take the wisdom and the insight of life experience with me into the next game. And that's kind of how I think about our flesh and blood life from lifetime to lifetime.
Well, there's one other comment I want to make, but it actually gets covered in part by the next section. So let's look at the next section, because once again, it's all tied together. This one's entitled, Why Don't I Remember My Past Lives? It's just, looks like it's just three paragraphs. Yeah, okay, so I'll just read it. It says, it was agreed before you came that you would not have memory, muddling, confusing, hindering memory of all that you have lived before, but that you would have a sense, a guidance that comes from within. And it was agreed that the guidance would be in the form of emotion, which would be manifested to you in the form of feeling. Your inner being cannot respond in thought at the same time that you are transmitting a thought. And so your inner being has agreed to offer you a feeling so that you can know the appropriateness of what you are feeling, speaking, or doing in the context of your greater or broader intentions. Every time you set forth a conscious intention of something you want, your inner being factors all that in. And so as you are more deliberate in that which you offer in the form of intent, such as I want, I intend, I expect, your inner being is able to factor all that in to give you clearer, more specific, more appropriate guidance. Many physical beings, because they do not understand that they are the creator of their own experience, do not set forth deliberate intentions. They resign themselves to taking what comes, not understanding that they are the attractor of what comes. But under those conditions, it is more difficult to allow because you feel that you are a victim. You feel that you are vulnerable. You feel that you are not in control of what comes. So you feel you must guard yourself from what may come, not understanding that you are the inviter of what comes. That is why we say that an understanding of how you are getting what you are getting is essential before you will be in a position of being willing to allow yourself or to allow any other. Okay. So they've just laid out an argument. They've basically said that we come into this life blind, in a sense, or, you know, blank memory regarding what has gone on in our past. Mm-hmm. And they conclude from that situation that also it is a little bit tricky because many of us, because we aren't, and I kind of make the connection, like, because we don't have a memory of that past, we don't really have any memory of what, you know, what was going on before we decided to come into this world. Therefore, we don't really understand how the world works. We don't really get it. And we sometimes have to have a teacher like Abraham come along and say, well, you know, what you're really trying to do is use this law of attraction thingy and, you know, be an allower and all that kind of stuff, because life doesn't previously come with a guidebook. Okay, here's what you do. Well, when I look at that, I also think in terms of, like, well, you mentioned Sylvia Brown or Shirley MacLaine or whatever. One of the things that is common to their discussion about spirit and about past life and pre-life and so forth is that they claim at the end of life, you transition over to the other side, and then there's what they call a life review, in which they basically, you know, you basically get your life played back for you with, you know, all of your loved ones looking on, so to speak, and it's supposedly a very loving experience, and that's where you basically go over what you've learned in your lifetime. Well, here we have Abraham saying, well, no, lessons are not what you're all about here. So it makes me wonder, is there a life review? If I had to guess, I'd say Abraham says, no, there's no life review. There's no point to that. That's like what they said in the previous section. That's like thinking about the things that you did when you were 3 or 10 or 12. What do you think?
Well, you know, it's funny because I've learned those same kinds of things. I've heard that from Sylvia Brown, from, you know, Shirley MacLaine, and from John Edwards, and from many others,
right,
about life reviews. But the way I look at it today is it's not like it was a life review that shows you, oh, you had this bump in the road and you kind of screwed up here and you should have done some forgiveness work, you know, and then you had this high thing. It was really great. You did awesome here. I don't see it as that kind of life review. I see it more like a gratefulness or an appreciation summary of all the positive things that you garnered from this lifetime to celebrate. So that's how I see it, because I've heard Abraham talk about how when you leave your earthly body, you leave behind all negativity. Everything that didn't work for you stays here, and all that you take with you is all the positivity and all the positive things that did serve you and served your greater, broader self. So that's kind of what, I mean, I've never said this before or never even articulated this idea, but from your question, I kind of take it as, yeah, there may be a life review. It may be called that, it may not. But to me, I see it more as a summary of all the goodness that you took from this life, and now you've expanded your broader self as you move forward.
So it's like your personal greatest hits.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I love how you summarize my summaries. Yeah, it's like your greatest hits reel.
So
your highlight reel.
Now let me throw this one at you, because they tied it together here in a way, and Shirley MacLaine and Sylvia Brown and the others who promote, I'll call it the other kind of life review, although maybe they have the same view that you're expressing. No matter how you look at that, ultimately what everyone here is saying is we come into this life blind about where our past was and what it was all about and what we did and all that, because it would be confusing. What's the way, how did Abraham say it here? It would be muddling, confusing, and hindering memory of all that you lived before. Okay. Then why is it that there is this value, because I have to infer there's a value here. Why is there a value in coming into the world without any understanding and knowledge of how, for instance, the law of attraction works? Of how important it is to do allowing? Why is that a good thing? I don't follow that logic.
Well, I don't
understand.
Okay, so what I get from what was just said in this chapter is that what we don't have memory of or immediate access to is our past lives. But what they do state very clearly is that we have come into this this life experience having an inner being, which is our broader self, that remembers everything and knows everything, and is there to provide that level of guidance through our feelings. So it's not that we're left blind. We have a guide.
And yet the experience of blindness is there. In fact, they start their third paragraph of this section by saying, many physical beings, because they do not understand that they are the creator of their own experience, do not set forth deliberate intentions. They resign themselves to taking what comes, not understanding that they are the attractor of what comes. So, I mean, well, it's great to have a guide, but if you come in without the understanding, what good is the guide?
Well, the guide is constantly calling you 24/7 to your truth.
Okay. Finish that thought. So, to me, that's an unfinished thought.
Well, I guess I don't see it as pure blindness. It's just we didn't come in with the memory, but it's like, but we have been given this incredible resource called our inner being that is on a constant quest to keep us aligned to the mothership. And it's the other physical beings that we, you know, are born into the families of, or, you know, people around us that because they may be not aligned to their mothership, because they are following what they were taught, it causes us to start to move away from our inner being and our inner knowing. But I believe when we're all little itty bitty ones, especially pre-verbal, we're very connected to our inner being. And it's just over time, we may become unconnected or not as connected.
Which
so
sounds
there
to me
is
like
kind of a double-edged sword there.
There is,
it.
Yeah. And that to me is the exact time when I would want to know what my previous memories were. Because at least then I would have some idea about why it is I was experiencing this early on, this experience of being connected and then being drawn away from connectedness by, you know, the big adults who are, you know, the people who really know the way for us to go. You know, having the past knowledge would be helpful for that.
I'm not necessarily seeing great value in knowing what happened in your previous lives. I think what you're talking about, and tell me if I'm right or wrong, that you're wanting to know like what the knowledge is, not the, I went through this experience, I was married to this person, I had these children. It's not that kind of thing. It's more like you want to understand how to live life in a way that's productive and easy and nice and fun and happy.
Or more precisely, I want to understand what works.
That's what your inner being is for. That's what your inner being guidance is about.
To me, there's a dichotomy there. The dichotomy is, okay, we have an inner being guidance system, which once we get here, we learn not to pay any attention to until much later in life we realize, oh, we should have been listening to that all along. That doesn't strike me as a terribly efficient medium.
Well, okay, I'll use my own life example, not because it's the best one, it's the one I have.
And you'll have to be short, too, because we're running out of time, but yes. Go ahead.
No matter how much others were trying to pull me away from my inner guidance, my inner guidance was always getting through. Did I always trust it? No, because the world around me didn't seem to talk about it or trust it. But I've always been connected. But how much I trusted it was a different story.
Mm. Well, that's true.
And I think we all, in a way, have had a sense of our inner guidance because we all have feelings. And our feelings equal our guidance. We just didn't always know how to interpret the feelings or the guidance that was coming to us. But the good news is we're knowing that. I know my inner guidance today. You're learning your inner guidance. And the people who are tuning into our podcast, I truly believe, are wanting to better understand their inner guidance because law of attraction is kind of part and parcel with our guidance. It works together. That's how we become deliberate creators, by understanding our feelings and interpreting them in a way that works for us.
Well, this is true. So thank you for nicely summarizing why we continue to do the podcast and why our listeners continue to listen. It's a good thing.
It's fun.
It is fun. And the only bad part
life
is we'll have
is
to wait
adventure.
Till Monday. It is an adventure. The only bad part is we'll have to wait till Monday to continue the discussion, but keep living it.
We will keep living
the adventure and you know, join us next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye for now.